I want to welcome you all to NERCOMP 2012. This is the 18th annual conference, and it is also the first year we're streaming our conference online, so I'd like to welcome also our online participants today. I'd like to quickly take a poll of the audience. How many, for you, is it your first NERCOMP conference?
Wow.
Fair number. How many of you have been to five or less? How many, 10 to 15? Anybody been to all 18 annual conferences? We should have a prize if there's someone in the audience for that. No one? If you have, come see me later. Registration as of today, this is the second highest registration we've had. Last year was our highest registration. We had 621 total attendees as of today. That includes 487 participants. That includes our daily only and 134 exhibitors today. And we have greater than 150 colleges and universities represented, which is amazing.
That's great.
So what's going on? Thank you. So what's going on? You'll see some new things today. I first should explain why you see a little bit of a Mardi Gras theme going on. We actually wanted to bring a little bit of an experience to the conference, so we decided to pick up on the Mardi Gras theme, although it was early this year. So you'll see we had greeters welcoming people, handing out beads, showing you where registration was. We have T-shirts. You see gold, green, and purple T-shirts floating around. Those are all our program committee and board members. The gold in the traditional Mardi Gras stands for power, green stands for faith, and faith, and purple stands for justice. So if you see people in the T-shirts, they're here to help you. Please ask them questions. We're also using the QR code on the back of the T-shirts, and that is promoting our new website. We'd love your input and feedback on what we can do to make that better. As I said, we have an online session this year. We have 23 different things being streamed, including these general sessions. We have 50 participants who have registered for online, and in some cases, that means conference rooms set up at your universities that are showing it to multiple people, so we're really reaching a broad number of people this year, which is fantastic. We have dinner groups this year. Last year, I heard from some people that they either come by themselves, it's their first time, they don't know anyone. They really would love to find someone to go to dinner with on Tuesday night. So we set up three different dinner groups. One is specific to LMS conversation, and then two open dinner groups. There's sign-up sheets at the registration booth. If you'd like to sign up to go to dinner with a group, there will be 10 people at each dinner. So please do that. Back of the exhibit hall, you'll see something called NERCOMP Central. That has the Mardi Gras theme. Come meet the board, meet the program committee, talk about how to get involved, talk about what's going on with professional development opportunities, and please go by and pick up your lanyappy. And I can't tell you what that is. It's part of the theme. You'll find out when you get there. We also are doing something new with NERCOMP this year, and this summer we have a 3-day immersion experience in July. It's called LOA. It's the Learning Organization Academy. Stop by. If you represent a library and IT organization, want to emphasize individual staff or group learning in face of rapidly evolving changes, stop by, find out more about LOA, pick up a brochure, talk to the board. It's a great experience. We've got over 50 corporations in our exhibit all offering technology solutions for higher ed. Back of your directory, you'll see your program, you'll see a directory of all of those. Go by, if you didn't pick up at the tote stuffing station a floor plan card, pick one up, get 15 stamps, drop it off at NERCOMP Central by 1:30 on Wednesday. We're giving away three free NERCOMP 2013 registrations. So you can see we have a wide variety. There's something for everybody here. We've got two keynote speakers, Dan Roberts, who's brought a wonderful panel with him, David Poe, concurrent sessions. We've got posters to Birds of a Feather roundtable lunches today with 18 different topics, several constituent group meetings, all the exhibit halls, number of opportunities to get involved in network. We also invite you to join us at the reception today at 5:30 over at the Westin. And don't forget, fill out those online evaluations. Might seem like a pain, but that's the way that we get information and help improve these from year to year and enhance the program based on what you want to see. I have a quick list, I hope, of thank yous before I introduce our keynote. So quickly, I'd like to Gina Seizing to stand up. She was my mentor from last year. She was the program chair last year, taught me everything I need to know and more. Wonderful person to work with. Thank you, Gina. I'm going to ask you just to hold your applause to the end of the thank yous, if you could, so I can go through this quickly. I don't want to take too much time. I want the program committee to please stand so you can see all of the people involved in making this a success and their hard work. Thank you very much, guys. Can't do it without you. The board, please stand up. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to serve in this role. I don't know if it was because you think I have the skills to do it or if you just wanted a warm body and no one else wanted to do it, but I thank you. It's been wonderful, and I've learned a lot through the process. Cara Bellotta from Tufts, who was my co-chair or vice chair this year, absolutely fabulous person to work with. I'm so thrilled to have gotten to know you. Your sense of humor has made this a lot more fun to do. And good luck next year as I pass the baton over to you. EDUCAUSE, the phenomenal association partner that we work with, they are the pros. We work closely with them, and by doing so, we have the confidence that this will go off without a hitch. Thank you so much to the core team, Leah Lazari, EDUCAUSE meeting planner, Catherine Yang, Carolyn Coleman, who is the manager of corporate relations, and thanks to all the corporate sponsors and exhibitors, especially DataTel and SGHE, who is this sponsor of this particular general session today. Leslie DeGrassi, who does our speaker liaison, Lida Lyson, the regional professional development manager, all the online staff, which this is a huge year for them, Victoria Fanning, Susie Henderson, and Shannon Smith, who were trying this out for the first time, and it's just been wonderful. All the EDUCAUSE staff on site who are assisting with all the facets of the conference registration, tech support, et cetera. Thank you to Lisa and Dinas, who are our NERCOMP board staff. We could not run NERCOMP without the staff of Lisa DeMauro and Dinas Kalanis. SIG Chair Mark Berman, who was hosting the SIG Master Breakfast this year. There were 61 special interest SIGs this year and 2,700 registrants. Cheers to all of you as well for that. We have an IR lunch today that Ravi Ravishenko will be hosting for us. Carrie Saarinen, who is our social media strategist and will be doing all kinds of tweeting about this conference. And please, everyone, use the hashtag NERCOMP12. If you use NC12, you're going to get to North Carolina politics. We don't want that. All the pre-conference session coordinators and presenters, the people from the Senior Leadership Forum Planning Committee and panel yesterday, led by David Todd, heard it was a fabulous event. The Birds of a Feather coordinators, Kevin Brassad and Dawn Thistle, and all the Birds of a Feather facilitators that were working the table. And thank you to all of you who are presenting, participating, and attending. You are what makes this conference a success, what makes NERCOMP such a vibrant community. So now, without further ado, I want to say you might be wondering about the theme of this year's conference. The human side of IT, does technology enhance or limit human interactions? I know we all have our own answers for that. But this theme was inspired by today's keynote, Dan Roberts, and his work. Dan is the president and CEO of Willett & Associates Consulting, Inc. He's been in the IT industry since 1985 and focused on helping CIOs develop the human side of the IT equation. He meets and strategizes with IT senior leadership teams around the country and is passionate about helping them transform their organizations from siloed, technology-centric, order-taker cultures to ones that are positioned as consultative, client-focused, strategic business partners of choice. Dan's book, Unleashing the Power of IT, Bringing People, Business, and Technology Together, defines a new mindset and core skill set critical for IT to become part of the fabric of today's ever-changing, increasingly complex environments. Whoops. Missing a card. Dan and his panel will talk about success stories, lessons learned, and help you understand why marketing is so critical in positioning your organization as a strategic business partner and valued asset. They'll share strategies, technologies, and create awareness of IT's value to your institution. Please welcome Dan Roberts.
Thanks, Cecilia. Great to have you. Well, good morning. So as I travel the country, there's this myth out there that I find that we in IT are seen as quiet, shy, reserved, introverted kind of people, and I know this is wrong because I hang out with you guys all the time. So I'm trying to change that myth. So if you'd help me this morning, let's see if we can take a dent in that. So let's try again. Good morning. Fantastic. Thank you, Christine and your team. And wow, pretty amazing the team that you've pulled together here to make this happen. When Christine called months ago, she takes this job very seriously. She goes, "There's going to be hundreds of very, very important people, busy people, really smart people in the room." And she went down through this list of things that she wanted in the moderator. I just wrote them down. I thought you'd find it interesting. She says, "We've got this human side of technology theme." And she says, "We need a subject matter expert. We need somebody who's incredibly smart. At least 25 years experience. I want visionary. I want futuristic. I want passion. I want someone with lots of energy. I want entertaining. I want humor. And I want good looking." Sarah, Christine, they're all busy. It's great to be with you today. Thank you so much, and congratulations for the great turnout. I'm honored to be here, and I'm really honored to be with this group of panelists here. As my mom always said, you've got to tell the truth. So in the spirit of full disclosure, I'm the weak link today, okay? And I'm going to have our panelists, our stars of the show, introduce themselves so you know who they are. And we didn't match outfits before we came here today, so... Mitch, you want to start us off?
My name's Mitch Davis. I'm the CIO for Bowdoin College. I've been there about 7 years. Bowdoin's a small liberal arts college in Maine. And about 8 years ago, Bowdoin came up with the idea that they wanted to incorporate technology into a liberal arts education. So they created a position for a CIO who's also a senior officer and has sort of strategic direction for the whole college.
I'm Marilyn Smith. I'm the CIO at MIT. I've been there for about 2.5 years. My background was in financial services, and I believe I was hired to help transform, which is already in the middle of transformation when I got there, the IT organization to a service-based organization at MIT. And thank you for the beads. I guess I have faith in Dan and in the rest of the panel today.
Good morning. I'm Steve Figali. I'm the Vice President and CIO for Villanova University. We're about 10,000 students, Roman Catholic institution outside of Philadelphia, and it's a pleasure to be here this morning.
Thank you very much. So as you see, I was so grateful when they said yes, because these are people who are very business savvy, very entrepreneurial in their thinking, they're out of the box, two come from private industry, and so for this topic today, I was just ecstatic that they would join us. Looking forward to having some fun today. As we prepared for the session, we didn't want to be talking at you a lot. We didn't want to be PowerPointing you to death. And so the format today is going to be really your session. And what we're going to do is I'm going to cover just a few points here to start us off, get you thinking a little bit, set some context around this crazy idea of marketing IT. But the real focus is going to be you and your questions and your interaction with the panelists. So be thinking about your questions. You've got some incredible people here to talk to. I did bring copies of our book that Christine referenced, and as a thank you, my colleague Casey is going to come by and give you a copy of the book for asking a question. Hopefully a good question, but no pressure. Okay? And so is that fair enough? Does that sound like a good format? Perfect. Perfect. So let's get started. Question for you before I jump in. Remember, my mom's motto, right? You've got to be honest here. So how many people jumped out of bed this morning and said, "I cannot wait to go market IT today"? One hand, one brave soul. Thank you for your honesty. So a follow-up question to that would be, how many people here think that communicating our value to provost, president, trustees, faculty, all your constituents out there, communicating our values so that it's understood by all those constituents is critical to our success? Fantastic. So a little bit of a gap there. Now, maybe you don't need to wake up in the morning and think about it first thing. But we're going to share some things with you that may put marketing more on your radar and help you in terms of bringing this back to your staff. To get us started, I like to talk about marketing in terms of what marketing is not, because there's a lot of negative stereotype. I mean, how many people really dig marketing? I said, well, thank you. Let's talk later. Most people, it's that dirty M word, right? It's that thing that other people do. You know, that negative stereotype. And I apologize if there's any family members who are in this business, but think of the old traditional stereotypical, right? Used car salesman. It's hype and it's glitz and we're really trying to fool people and it's a silver bullet and so forth. It's none of those things. And how many people here lack demand back at work? Anybody lacking demand? Not have enough business? A lot of people think, why the heck would I want to market? I've already got way too much to do. And marketing really is a way to help you get the right business, maybe not more business. And as Christine said in her introduction, we simply define marketing as creating an awareness of our value. Creating an awareness of our value. I mean, how many people do that every day? Right? You do that every day. Make it seem a little easier to take. And if you find the word marketing just too difficult, just substitute with communication or education. It's really all marketing is, right? Marketing's really, it's really an orientation. It's more about a mindset. A lot of people in IT like to make it a task, a thing that we do, and we check it off, and we move on. It's really something that we're doing ongoing all the time. And how many people have been reading the research for the last 10 or 15 years, the consultants, the researchers, number one, 10, 15 years running, align IT with the business. Have you seen that? Priorities? How many people think that's kind of old news today? Right? As I meet with CIOs today, they're saying, we've got to start instilling a mindset, a culture, a philosophy that says, we are the business. We are the business. Subtle, but very important, I think. The alignment pipe dream, very difficult to achieve. It's always us and them versus we are the business. So, just chime out, just be curious, your thoughts. Who's responsible for marketing? We all are. Do you buy that? I'm going to give Linda a book. She's got this right. You cheated, didn't you? Couldn't agree more. CIOs, any CIOs in the house? Right? Your leadership team, responsible for marketing? Absolutely. Some of you might be large enough. You might have a communications person. Ever heard anybody like that, Christine? Relationship managers, account managers, business liaisons, marketing, project managers. We have some organizations that we work with who say, you don't have a project plan until you've got a marketing plan. I mean, they take it down to that level. So, as Linda said, it's everyone's job. It's everyone's job. When we teach marketing, we actually have for over 20 years taught a workshop on how to market IT's value. And there's two ways that we approach that. One is from a formal perspective, developing IT marketing plans. Anybody have an IT marketing plan today for your organization? A few hands, just a few. Really would encourage you to think about creating real targeted marketing plans to ensure that your organization is positioned in the minds of your different constituents the way you want to be positioned. And we see folks today creating marketing plans, obviously for your clients. What do you call those folks out there that you work with in your organization? Still here, users, customers, clients, stakeholders, words you don't want to use here. We like the word clients or business partners. Users, we've got to put that in the past. Customer, better. But customer, who has customers? Banks, retailers, kind of a short, more of a transactional relationship, right? Do we want transactional relationships? I don't think that we do. So we like the term client, because who has clients? Attorneys, doctors, accountants, right? Professionals, long-term relationships. So we like to use the word client. Marketing IT's value to IT, what the heck is that? More and more today, we're seeing the clients that we work with are developing marketing plans, marketing our value to our own people. Why would we do that? We're so busy. Why would we take the mindshare to do that? Well, if we go back to the last slide, and if we all agree it's everybody's job, does everyone in your department understand the full value that we provide to our clients out there? Absolutely not. They probably know what they're working on. They probably know what their team is doing, what the value is. But we really need to help them understand the full value of IT so we can help them market IT's value across the organization. The second area we focus on is this more informal and so, so important. You ever heard of hallway marketing? Hallway marketing? So, so critical. Again, it goes back to everybody in your organization marketing you. It doesn't matter if it's the elevator, the cafeteria, the hallway. They're going to bump into the president. They're going to bump into some people out there. And guess what they're going to be doing? They're going to be marketing you. Positively, proactively, or in other ways. Ever utilize press statements? You ever heard of press statements? Press statements, maybe like an elevator speech kind of thing. Press statements, just talk about that for a minute. Press statements are just simply consistent messages about IT. We struggle with consistency, right? We've got to get more consistent with our messaging. Short, concise, 15 to 30 seconds, no more than that. Quick question for you, and some of you will probably know this answer. Today, average adult attention span. How long? 15 seconds? 2 minutes? 2 seconds? What'd you say? 8 seconds. 8 seconds. So just think what it was like for the panel and I preparing for you today, knowing you've got an 8-second attention span. 8-second attention span. Positive, jargon-free headline. How do we in IT do being jargon-free? I sense we like our jargon. Clear, concise, consistent, and client-focused. Power press statements. So just a couple of things to wrap up this portion here. Just some tips to leave you with. One I don't have up here is 7 times, 7 ways. 7 times, 7 ways. When you're communicating, tell me if this has happened to you. We put a message out, probably blast it via email. Maybe we have a town hall meeting. Maybe we have some other means that we communicate it. 2 months later, do people remember? Do they remember? If we hit them maybe 2 or 3 times and we move on to something else, 7 times, 7 ways. That's what the research says. Hit people 7 times, 7 different ways. WIFMs. You ever heard of WIFMs? What's a WIFM? What's in it for me? Thank you, Gina. What's in it for me? If you can understand your client's WIFMs, and it's different, right? When you're dealing with senior executives versus staff, it's different, right? If you can understand the WIFMs, if you are influencing, if you are negotiating, if you're building relationships, if you're marketing, if you understand the WIFM, life gets a lot easier. And the people who know that have appreciated that. Benefits versus features. What do we love in IT? When we're talking, are we talking benefits usually or are we talking features? I'm talking about your staff in general. I know that you're all benefits oriented, client focused, marketing savvy, business savvy people, but for your people, absolutely, we love our features. We've got to really help our people if we're going to help them be successful in this profession, especially today, the way things are going. We've got to start talking more in terms of benefits, business outcomes, results, outcomes, and things like that. And then language of business versus technology. Same idea. We've got to, you know, our technology skills and acumen get us in the door. I mean, it's so, so important. But in today's environment, it's our business savvy that really keeps us there and allows us to add value at that strategic level. So that's just a little context, just to get us warmed up, get us started a little bit. But now let's get into the meat of the program. So now it's your turn, all right? Casey's going to, you can either come out to the microphones in the middle, or Casey will bring a microphone to you because, well, we're very client-focused here, so we want to come to you. Sometimes it's a little bit uncomfortable to come to the microphone. So let's get started, and who wants to ask the first question? First question, yes, sir. Casey, right here.
When I see challenge, I think the first thing that comes to mind when I see challenge is the idea of convergence, that IT isn't just one department anymore. You've got IT, you've got library, you've got audiovisual, you've got instructional design. And In most organizations, that's parceled out to all these different units. And those units can tend to be kind of provincial. So the biggest challenge is not only marketing IT, but getting everybody on the same page as far as a plan. So do you have any insights on how to get everybody on the same page?
Anybody want to start?
I can start. When I first came to Bowdoin, everything was siloed. There was IT was siloed. A director would report to a group of people who refused to let anybody outside of this group communicate to another group unless it went through the directors, and that was kind of universal. The library and the IT were separate. Everybody was pretty much on their own. First, removing all those directors was a good plan, except for one that was actually, and then we reduced that cost and pushed it down into support, and people knew that I was serious about us not having silos. Then going over and sort of getting to know the librarian, getting to know everyone, so I created a strategic plan and an infrastructure plan, and I used those as my, and also did the budget so people could actually read it, what we were spending. Then I went to all the chairs in the departments and sat down with them for an hour. Some of them said it was the first time a senior officer had ever crossed their door, but I'd made that kind of outreach to them. And I wanted to listen. I told them I wanted to listen to them, like what their goals were, what they wanted from their departments, the library wanted, what everybody wanted. And then after I got all of that information, I wrote it up and sat down with them as a group and talked to them about where we were going and what we were going to do and how I was going to support them in their efforts to meet their goals and align with what we were doing with technology. And that's not a simple process. It took about 6 months to figure that out, another month to write it, another year before we actually came to the point where we were headed all in the same direction. And then maintaining those connections, some people said, how do you have enough time to spend, just talk to all of these people and keep things going? I said, I don't have a choice. That's my job. It sort of clears the path for everybody else to do a job and not be restricted by personal motivation, all the kinds of things that can throw roadblocks in the way for the speed at which things can happen.
Can you talk quickly about the cookie story when you first started out?
The cookie story?
The cookies? Didn't you show up?
There's another story I'll tell.
Okay, we'll get to that one.
I will tell. It's the same thing. So one of my big problems is I had a person in a development who had been at Bowdoin forever, knew how everything worked, absolutely hated IT. And we had little banters now and then at the senior, over the senior officers' things. So I bought a bot, he's a little Irish guy, and he said, nobody here knows anything about scotch. So I belonged to this wine group in California, and I sat out there, what's the best bottle of scotch I can afford? So I got that, and then I had a friend from Canada send me Cuban cigars. That's not legal, but. And then I had two scotch glasses, some chocolates. I put them in a bag, and I walked over to him, and I gave them to him. And he looked at me, and he said, oh, this is amazing. I've never even seen this before. And then glasses and everything. And that's just to let you know that I do know what a good bottle of scotch is. And he said, what's this all for? I said, this is for when we work together. And he said, what do you mean when we work together? We work together now. And I said, no, we don't work together now. But we will be shortly. And when we do start working together, I want you to come back to your office, pour yourself a glass of scotch, light up a cigar. Remember, I gave those to you.
That's cool. Marilyn.
I have a different story. It's more about empowering the people that work in the IT organization and getting them to start working with the folks at the libraries and the other IT leaders across campus. We're very decentralized. We have a central IT organization. And I would tell you that I've been there for 2.5 years, I mentioned. It is still a black box. There are still people that are calling our IT organizations black boxes because they don't understand what the people do. And we've done a lot of things, and actually with Christine's help, because she's the head of the manager of communications, telling stories, breaking down barriers. We had some rules in place where people couldn't talk to one another, same, very similar as yours. So we put together a plan and a mission and goals and communicated it. But we also started meeting with the libraries and with the other areas. And I think that there was some fear although it wouldn't have happened at a place like MIT, that we were out to take them over or to run some of their things. And we sort of shot down that fear by starting to work together and partnering. And we have a group called IT Leaders, which meets every couple of months. There's about 50, 60 people in it, believe it or not, IT support for various departments, labs, and centers across MIT, which employs over 12,000 people. And as a matter of fact, there's two people here, the CIO of Broad and the CIO of Lincoln Laboratory, who are actually here today, Martin Leach at Broad, and I don't know if Charles Maxson is here in the audience or not. But they actually attend the IT leaders meetings, and we pick pertinent topics. They present their strategies. The central IT presents their strategies. So it's similar to what you did, but a little bit different in terms of trying to work together and understand what we share in common and what is different, and get everybody on the same page in a non-threatening way. And I would say that there is a lot more teamwork now. And we also have another group called IT Partners, which is funded by the Central IT Group. There's maybe 400 people in it. I don't even know how many people are in it, a few hundred. And anybody can join it that's doing any kind of IT across the campus. And there's a list, and they send each other questions. When I first got there, the IT people in my department weren't allowed to answer the questions because some wrong answers had been sent out and it represented. So we just opened that up, and that was an easy thing. So there's probably some easy things that people in here can do, no matter what level you're at, to encourage cooperation. Call somebody up in an IT department across campus and go out to lunch with them. You'll be amazed at how much you learn and the relationships that you begin to build.
Yeah, outstanding. Steve?
My scenario would be similar to my colleagues. I started Villanova about 10 years ago, and back then we were a fairly traditional organizational structure supporting IT. I would say we had issues in terms of, and we were, I would say, predominantly centralized. There were some decentralized elements in the colleges and or the library. But I would say we were not delivering value at that point in time, and we had to look internally first to correct our shop and take the right approach. We did things like literally combine groups, data networks, and telecommunications to send a signal that we were not siloed, if you will. You know, we had the ERP group and a web development group, and sometimes they would actually conflict with each other in terms of trying to support the same initiative. So we made some changes internally and tried to change the perception or the value delivered on the campus. By doing that, stabilizing the environment and starting to create solutions, I think we created a change in perception of IT and that there was value. Internally, we started to realize that technology was fairly complicated and that you couldn't have one group doing one thing in the classroom and one thing with learning management system with no synergies. So we started to see groups, the library turned over an internal classroom technology group to us. The colleges have turned over their IT staffs to us. And I think we present ourselves as a service and solutions organization, not a siloed IT shop. And I believe we're just delivering value. And then all the underlying changes, we had to make people changes, infuse new staff, go to integrated planning, recognizing the sophistication or the complexity of technology and delivering solutions. So it took a while, but I believe the campus leaders, our clients, started to realize that made sense and that what we're doing is the right approach to leverage the entire body of technology group managed together in an integrated way.
Is that helpful? Great question. I find it so helpful, I think. What they're saying, too, is you've got to have a foundation based on relationships and trust and credibility, being able to deliver, right, all those kind of things. I probably should have said that early on. Before you can market, we've got to get these things right because you don't have a leg to stand on if we don't. But, thanks for the great stories and input. Who's next? Who'd like a okay? Go ahead, Case.
Thank you. this on? I'll use this one. So besides going through and meeting with the people face-to-face and having community meetings, is anybody using social media, Facebook, Twitter, blogs, email, listserv to further do their marketing? And if so, is there a branding concept that's implemented?
Thank you. Steve?
Absolutely. I think we're, interestingly enough, I think we have an incredible challenge in front of us in that we support multiple audiences, prospective students, current students, alumni, faculty, staff, administration. We found traditional communication sources were not adequate. Obviously, our student population's heavily into Facebook, et cetera. So we revamped and we use multiple channels, the web, face-to-face, social media inclusive of Facebook, to communicate with any and all audiences on campus. And we're finding, for example, the Facebook interaction for students primarily, I'll say that is clearly the heaviest user, is much more powerful as an interaction tool than, say, our website and some of the other efforts that we had. So I find in today's environment, you have to use multiple channels in order to communicate effectively with such a diverse audience.
I would just quickly agree with that. We do use Facebook and Twitter and social media. And I would say that I would add to what Stephen said that it's really important for our internal communications. A lot of our internal IT people enjoy talking with each other and others on the campus using those tools.
Mm-hmm. So at Bowdoin, it's small enough, 1,750 students, that the grapevine's actually faster than the internet. We created a group called ITAC, which is an Information Technology Advisory Council, which is a number of students. Anybody can volunteer to be on it. But it's to sort of drive changes using technology to make student life better. And we focus on up to 12, 16, 15 projects a year that actually change the way the students interact with IT or with the college or in teaching. And we found that those are relatively inexpensive. A lot of times it's a change of small business process that you need to do to make their lives better. And the students act as the liaison to the department. In fact, they write articles for the student newspaper. They sit on forums. And if you want to have people that believe in you sitting in meetings that you can't be in, because usually the biggest arrow that hits you is when you're not in the room. But if you have a group of people, including students and faculty, that stand up when people say things, it's a way of being there and not always being present.
I would like to second what Mitch says. We do a lot with the students. The students are developing mobile applications with us. We sponsor a contest with them. We have a group very similar. It actually, the group itself doesn't do projects. We're doing projects with other groups of students. But the group actually reviews a lot of, it meets every 2 weeks and reviews a lot of what we do and provides input. And it does build trust with the students. I mean, you can do that with the faculty and with the students and with the staff, but I think the student trust is really important, and nurturing that, like you're doing with your group and we're doing with our group, is very critical.
I did want to add, I think there was a question relative to brand. We have made extensive efforts. Actually, the university in total has gone through a rebranding effort, but the thing that I learned from that is you need to be consistent in your messaging. Whether it's our Facebook site or what we're talking about at an SGA meeting with student government or focus groups with students, if we're trying to drive a solutions and service message to the community, we need to be consistent. Our Facebook, our website, what we say to the community needs to be consistent. I found at the university level, in the market research the university did, Villanova had a very diluted message out in the world. Nobody could say, you know, is it good academically, whatever. And we found consistent branding, literally the look and feel, but also the messaging was really important.
And does IT have separate branding from the university?
No, it's there are branding guidelines that we tie into.
Okay.
Obviously, there's a communications group that controls the messaging about the university, but we take those same philosophies, if you will, to message appropriately internally. If your Facebook account is user-oriented or client-oriented to the students and your talking about new technologies and what you're communicating to faculty and staff is radically different. It doesn't make sense.
Absolutely.
We do have separate branding from the university, but it looks almost exactly like the branding for the university. It just has information services and technology, so it's very consistent with the branding for the university. And we also have a communications plan, which we follow, which is very much like what you described as a marketing plan. Mm-hmm. And it includes internal and external communications, and it doesn't just include communications that are done by the communications group. It includes communications done by other people in the department as we're rolling out projects or as we're making changes. And the communications group, which is a small one, there's only two people, they actually get involved in many, many of the actual services and projects that are in play in the department.
Excellent.
We have lots of other, we do all the other communications tool, digest, blogs, all that stuff. But one of the things I think that made a difference in the way we were able to provide services is we started doing an internal wiki that anybody that does anything on the system that could affect the overall operation of our business, they write about it and they talk about what they've done. So the help desk gets that, and some faculty have to subscribe to it because they're interested in what's going on. So it gives our really techie faculty the ability to know if the firewall is being changed or something like that. And that's actually, I was surprised by how many people subscribe to it. Mm-hmm. The difference it made between the help desk and the systems people and the help desk and the data people, because now as they're making their changes, everybody knows what's going on, and if there's an issue, the help desk is within seconds. They know, oh, this change was made, and we can get back to them and solve. So we solve things in about a third of the time that we used to.
Fantastic. Yeah, powerful tools, and that's today's world, right? Meeting our clients where they're at. And I think two things I would add to that is I know of one CIO who hires 10 college interns every summer, and he cuts them loose on creating these social media opportunities to reach out. And who best, right? Who best to do that than these kids? Secondly, I know of a CIO who has a blog. Does anybody have a blog, CIO blog? A couple of you do. She has been, she started off with great trepidation. Fast forward just a couple months, and she was having such an incredible dialogue, not only with her people, it fostered a dialogue with her people, but it started to spread throughout her global company, to the point now where she has innovation happening all the time between her and different constituents. So it's been a very powerful tool for her. So great question. Thank you. Mark?
Mitch started to address my question a little bit, but we've been talking a lot about marketing of the positive aspects of what we do, but we also have to deal with some things that are not so positive, like security awareness or phasing out end-of-life products or even upgrades that may involve good things but are just change. So I wonder if you could talk about dealing marketing of things that people are not as receptive to.
Good question. Does this fall in the category of lipstick on a pig? Is that what we're talking about? Thank you, Mark.
I'd say in security, we actually have our security person go out and do presentations to all the departments by request. They want to hear from him. He does a very good job of informing them of what goes on. Does a great job of terrifying them when he starts talking about all the things that could be happening if you don't pay attention to what you're doing. It actually got us involved in a very much larger project of PII to make sure that the whole college knew what that meant. And so the HR department set up a meeting where he met with all the departments, and it started in development, them being very concerned that some of their data was bad, in finance, sort of changing the way that people access data, the restrictions and stuff. That all came out of the department because of those communications we had with those departments about what their risks were associated.
So it's hard to know where to start, because we have something very similar with security, where we've done a lot with security awareness because of some new regulation that was passed in Massachusetts called WISP, which basically requires all laptops to be encrypted. And I would say that there's been a major effort on campus with the help of our security people, but also the help of our customer service people and our help desk, which are that we consider them the face to the customer. So we try to involve them in just about everything that we do. We have a governance committee that was started a couple of years ago, and this governance committee has been reviewing and approving roadmaps, some of them technical, some of them business. The business partners actually come and present their roadmap along with the technical partner from IT. But they recently approved retirement of a number of systems that were ambitiously starting on. And some of them were old things that probably should have been retired a long time ago. But we have a website. We publish the minutes of the governance committee on the website. We publish all the roadmaps. So we're trying to be as transparent as possible, and letting our own folks know and letting our customers know and getting support. I would say that transparency on in higher education is a lot more difficult than I thought it was going to be, because we're doing so much in IT, and it's what you decide to communicate and how, and it's important to communicate the bad news also. So we have this process that we put in place called root cause analysis. So when systems are down, and then when we have a notification, and we then analyze the root cause and correct it. And we're trying to be more public, both across IT and also with some of our customers, about exactly what's happening, what has happened, and why it has happened, whether it be bad news or it be difficult decisions that we have to make. But we're still working on it.
Mm-hmm. That's so good, right? Because bad news is kind of like fish, right? It doesn't get better with age. Right, so important. Steve?
In my excellent comments, I would only add two things. I think governance for us is hugely important, and I use that term very broadly, but there is a university-level IT governance group and then sub-governance groups across the campus. The membership of that governance group is intentionally, which I chair, which intentionally represents all the colleges and some of the vice presidents from the key administrative areas. Communication, transparency, telling them when there's going to be a systems outage, if we made a mistake doing the root cause analysis and being upfront about it, it's in our annual report. It's not hiding it. Letting the community know when we're taking the systems down to do maintenance, which used to be a nightmare. And we could never get windows, and then we started to proactively ask for and time some maintenance windows, and now the community is they're not happy about it, but they let it happen, know that it's a necessary evil. On the security front, the same as what Mitch said, we do have a security officer. It started in IT. He travels the campus. We've now embedded a security component in new hires' initial training session as they learn about Villanova. He does lunch and learns. We use the scare tactics. Clearly, there's plenty of press to capitalize on when there's a breach or something. We take advantage of it and let everybody know this is why we were trying to prevent this type of issue on campus. But again, it's all being transparent and proactive in communicating to the community. And I believe they appreciate that.
So I can say one more thing. Bowdoin used to have a lot of governance committees. And over time, because of the way we've integrated with all the departments and how we are as transparent as we can be, all of them voted to disband. I don't have any governance committees. I have two advisory committees, one of students, one of trustees. The faculty I just meet with and talk to them about their issues, and they feel that they're represented well enough that way. And I think I can do that because we're a small enough school. If I was back at Stanford, I would not try that process. All I would do is run around and talk to people. But at a small liberal arts college, having that connection, when something does go wrong, people know me personally, and they trust me if I tell them we're going to fix it, it's going to be okay, and they just go on and do their job and do what they do. They don't concern themselves with it. There's very little flack. You don't lose much credibility. Everything we do at IT is about building credibility for the department and trust within the institution so we can increase the speed at which we move.
And doesn't it come back to what we talked about earlier, the WIFMs, right? Especially that bad news. Understand the WIFMs to the folks that you're working with. I was conducting a similar session in Nebraska last week, and the state of Nebraska CIO was asked a similar question, and she said, "I tell people, listen, I know your name, I know everything about you. I know your birthday, your Social Security, I know your how much you make, because we've got all these, you know, revenue, and I know your kids, and I know where you live, and I know your driver's license, and I know your driver's record. In fact, I know where you drive because we've got the Easy Pass and blah, 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 blah. She goes, so if we breach security, guess what? That's all out there. I thought that was a great, great response to the question. Next.
Hi, thanks. It's an observation comment from earlier, but thank you, Mitch, for bringing it back around again within the last 2 minutes. It took 45 minutes for anyone to use the word help desk. And as a director, manager of a help desk team, we are already paid to do marketing, and we try our best. And so paying attention to, again, thank you, Bowden, for this, to the staffing and the outreach that your help desk team does and the support that they get from everybody above, it really helps. And they are the first point of contact for so many of us. And their attitudes, their ideas, their questions, their concerns, they also know everybody on campus better than anybody else does because they hear from them right away. So as much as early on in the conversation, there were all kinds of lists of people who do marketing for us. There were all kinds of committees that are out there on campus. We pay them pretty questionable amount of money to do that work, and they do their best to do a great job. So just a shout out.
Thank you. Yeah, great. Let's go in the back, Casey. Who in the back has a question? Casey, you want to run the mic?
Can I just add to that comment?
Please, yeah.
That's a great comment, and we did some branding with the help desk, but we use a lot of student workers, and we were also finding in support of the help desk or augmenting the help desk and the frontline support to students and faculty. We actually found we put them through a training program during the summer, et cetera, to model the right customer service techniques to understand broadly what's going on the campus, because we don't have the staffing to do all FTE sourcing of the help desk, but they're part of how we message to campus as well. So our help desk folks are absolutely on the ground and have the bi-directional communication with faculty and staff, but we also have students out there, and we needed to prepare them to do good work and consistently message the community and be focused on our clients, et cetera, students or otherwise. So that's a great, great comment.
I'll just add quickly, we have students on our help desk, and they're tremendous. It's a great integrated effort to provide the face to the customer for IT across campus. And our help desk gets questions, many, many questions that aren't related to the pure business that IS&T does, because there's all kinds of technology across campus, and we don't turn people away. So thank you to our help desk, because they're absolutely terrific.
A lot of moments of truth there, right? Every day, every day. Question in the back?
Yes. I was wondering if you have services or processes that have been named or marketed in a very techie way in the past, do you... And how do you rebrand them without confusing your clients?
Well, I'll try starting with that one. We are actually redoing our website right now, and one of the big challenges, going to roll out in April, one of the big challenges with the new website was all the jargon that was on the website. I'm trying to think of an example of something that we're actually rolling out that we've rebranded. Do you have an example? Yeah, that's a good example. Our IS&T website and consists of the regular website, but we also have a knowledge base that's accessible through the website or separately that is used across campus to help with problems. So if somebody encounters a problem, fixes it, and realizes it hasn't been encountered before, either they can go in and update the knowledge base or we'll go in and update the knowledge base, and we are restructuring that knowledge base to be more for people across campus to be more aware it actually is a knowledge base and that it's out there. It had a name before, Hermes, which we're still going to some people are still going to use. We've renamed it, but it's okay if people still use the word Hermes to describe it. But the bottom line is there were many people, maybe new employees, other people who didn't know what it is. So we renamed it a knowledge base. I think it's KBE.com. I should know the name, but it's coming out in April. And it's going to still be the same knowledge base. We're actually moving it, I think, from Wiki onto Drupal. Is that true? Staying in Wiki for now. Okay, we're moving. Actually, moving our website to Drupal.
Okay.
But it is a real challenge. I want to mention an example that's a different example that just occurred to me. I mentioned before that our governance committee, which consists of 7 members, it's a small governance committee, but not quite as small as Mitch's governance committees, considered a roadmap a couple of months ago, the data center's roadmap. Now, what's more technical than a 3-year plan for the data centers? And there were people, now granted it's MIT, so you tend to have more people who understand information technology on your governance committee. But I will tell you that I was so proud of the folks that put together that roadmap. It was, parts of it were highly detailed, but it was presented in a way that was the least technical way they could possibly present it, especially considering it was a technical roadmap. And they answered technical questions. They had technical people in the room and non-technical people in the room. And I know the gentleman that presented it, Gary Zachgeist, who's in our operations and infrastructure area and who put it all together with the help of his team, actually said he was surprised that people were so interested and they asked so many excellent questions at the meeting. So sometimes people really want to know what we're doing. And they want to know how it relates to them. Obviously, the data centers and the future of the data centers relates to many, many people across campus. And we have one of those IT leaders meetings that I mentioned before scheduled, I think, in another week or two. And that data centers roadmap is going to be presented there. So even the most technical things can be put together in a manner that folks can understand. And if you can relate it to them and to their interests,
right.
And what does it mean to them?
Perfect.
So I have a suggestion.
Please.
I haven't done this, but if you actually are changing the way that you're interacting with the group, in other words, you're not just rebranding the technical service and saying that you're something different, is come up with all the different ways that you are different than from what you were, share that with your clients, and ask them to name you. Get them involved in talking about what you are going to be and how that service is going to change the way you interact with them and how that has a meaning to them. And if you let them assign the meaning, and you'll go from there.
Great tip. Anything to add, Steve?
The only specific, I think those are great comments. We did rebrand what was our help desk service. We, through process review and feedback from the community, and we do about 50,000 service transactions a year. We also have a required student laptop program, tuition funded. So that group got together, redid all their processes, equipped them with mobile devices, new help desk systems, and rebranded them for the students primarily. We called our physical location and virtual support the Tech Zone, which was more meaningful to the student population. And we did that as part of all the process improvements and changes that we had, and we decided to, quote-unquote, brand it to communicate something different and new and hopefully better. And that has actually taken hold, I believe, now even faculty and staff. Everybody understands the physical Tech Zone as well as the virtual Tech Zone. And like Marilyn said, we redid our website. We used to be organized with static content by each group in IT and realized that the users want access to what their needs are, what their questions are, what they're probing. And we tried to get rid of all of that from our website. So as a user, right on that front page of the website, you can go and get your answer, whatever it is, regardless of where it comes from in the organization.
I just have one more thing to add to what Mitch was saying and what Stephen was saying. I was doing some reading to prepare for this. And one of the sentences I read is the customer or the client should be at the center of every single decision that you make. And actually having them literally at the center of the decision and actually having them there is probably something that I know we've been doing it more, but always keeping that in mind when that can happen. I thought that was a good comment.
Yeah, it certainly takes the guesswork out of it, right? And when they're at the table.
Yeah.
But also gets you buy-in.
Yeah. Sure.
They have ownership.
Right. Yes, sir. Casey, we'll get to you after, and then just go ahead, sir.
Speaking of the client being at the center, could you speak to the marketing challenge of sunsetting not just resources, that perhaps are no longer supported by the vendor, but also services that sort of at the management level, there's a feeling that it's just something we can't afford to provide anymore, staff commitment-wise, and selling that or putting the client, getting the client involved in that. Is that something you've had to face, and do you have suggestions for dealing with it?
Thank you, Bob.
Well, I'll give it a shot. We have had to deal with it, not as much as probably a lot of my staff would like we have dealt with it, to be honest, because we have a lot of services that we've replaced, but we're still supporting the old services. I would say, for one thing, we're getting, and we'll see how this works, we're getting cover from our governance committee. And we've already had cover for a couple of things, but we just went to them with about six things a couple of weeks ago. And we'll see how that actually works. But what we've been trying to do is work with the clients. And so I'm going to give you an example of our education systems area where we have a roadmap and a plan which includes adding, automating a lot of functionality that isn't automated, like online registration, online grading, scheduling. There are other things we're doing in that area. But at the same time, we're replacing parts, we're modernizing an older systems environment, replacing tools, replacing code, replacing parts of it that are older. And the customers have to understand that we need to spend time doing this as well as doing the business functionality. And I think if you've built that trust and the customers or the clients are seeing that your primary focus is on them and making their job easier. In other words, that's why we're there. We're not there to be an IT department. We're there to support education and research. I think then if you explain it in a clear way, what you need to do and why, and that's what we did when we went to the governance committee with these five or six things. We said, here's what they are. Here's why we need to replace them. Here's the resources that we will save and we can allocate to other things. And frankly, I think sometimes when you're retiring systems, the best way to explain it to people is to talk about the risk, not necessarily the resources or the money that you'll save, but the risk of 10 or 12-year-old servers going down or the risk of old code not being maintainable and needing to be replaced before it gets to that point, those types of things.
Mm-hmm. I would completely agree. I'm sorry, Mitch. Completely agree. Initially, we had to sunset a lot of technologies, hardware and software, as just absolute need just to get control in the environment and restore stability. But now we use governance and the various communication mechanisms to explain the rationale. Literally tomorrow, we have a governance meeting, and I won't mention the vendor's name, but we're talking about discontinuing service of a mobile technology. You can maybe guess who that might be, but... And literally going to the governance community, communicating out to the rest of the community about why we're doing it, what the risks are, what the rationale is, if there's an expense savings, and then here are the alternatives, and here's how we'll migrate everybody over. The community is generally pretty receptive to that type of thing now.
We do extensive business process because I'm also in charge of how things are done, not just the technology. So we do these business process assessments that last up to 3 to 6 months. Finance took 6 months. And during that process, we work with the clients as far as their receptivity to a new system and let them know that the old one goes away. So I never put a system in that replaces anything without the old one going away. And setting the timeline for that is something I need. Whether it's 3 months, I'd rather do it immediately. If we're going to trust a new system, I'd like to turn it off, but there's a sense of trepidation and fear from our clients that they'd like to see it stick around for about 6 months. We're doing a complete replacement of SIS and admissions. Admissions is flipping exactly at the time. We're not going to use the old system. The SIS group, and they're the ones that are pushing for the move because it took us 3 months of marketing to get to the point where faculty are pushing the use of the new SIS and staff are pushing the effort. So when we put it in, we've got 100% buy-in. So our implementation will be fairly easy, and we've gotten complete involvement with everybody who wants it installed. And we pretty much do that with all our systems. Hi, Tina.
We got one question back there, Casey. Excuse me.
So my IT department is all about control. Use our access, use our systems, use our platforms. And I've been marketing to my own department that we're not in control anymore. It's a cloud world. It's storage and Dropbox. It's all these things. So my question is, my faculty love me. My department wants to fire me. How do we market and turn the Titanic 180 degrees? Can you share anything about changing your own department, your own IT structure to go in a different direction?
I think the first thing we did is we started measuring IT.
I just hit a nerve, I think. Good question.
Is we measure IT performance by client perception. What the services we provide, what do the clients perceive what we're giving them, and is it something they want? If we manage our services to the point where the clients think that we're doing what they want, then we're successful. And as far as from IT standpoint, when I sit around and I hear people talk about we're deploying the best technology, they have to use it, I'm saying, yeah, but they hate you. Why would you use that? And that takes time to get there. But I think it was like 3 years, and we had some consultant come in. He's sitting down with the top Unix geeks, I guess you call them. They don't see the light of day. And they were deploying this new sort of infrastructure technology, talking about how they were going to do it. And then they looked up at each other and they said, so when we do this, what's the impact to the client? And is this a positive or a negative effect to them? And how are we going to put a package together so that this becomes a positive effect to the client? And the consultant ran up to my office and said, how did you do that? And it was done by over a long time of focusing them on delivering services that the client wants and not something that they think is good or useful.
Well, that's a tough question because I think every CIO and every head of any part of an IT organization is always working on that balance. I think you can set a mission and goals up that focus on the customer. I think you can set expectations and evaluate people based on focus to the customer. One of the cool things we've been doing, and again, it involves communications and Christine, is we have these department meetings. And the last three or four of them, we've actually had customers come in and talk to us along with the group that's supporting the customers. So it's been very helpful, even if all it was a customer. I think at one of them we had a couple of videos from customers touting some of the data management that we've been doing. And we've had all the presentations there be customer-focused recently. So I think you send a message to everybody. It doesn't change overnight, but I think you send a message to people. And I think if people understand also, if you talk about the mission of the educational institution that you're representing and what we do and why we're there, and you talk about it all the time. Like Mitch goes around and talks to people all the time, including to your internal folks as well as your external folks. Eventually, some of them get that and understand it and realize that that is what our focus is. We're there for the university. I think a lot of them already understand that and are already, at least in my environment, and are very focused on it. Mm-hmm. But it is hard to get people. The world is going through a lot of change right now, and it's really hard to get people in IT. This is my experience, not necessarily MIT, but before MIT. The IT people sometimes are the most resistant to change, some of them. And it's very interesting that is the case in light of the field that we're in.
I would echo your sentiments, actually take it a step further. I think we in technology, whether it be higher ed or any vertical, if you believe the status quo is going to carry you through, even if you're successful now and you're not willing to change, I think you'll fail in the future. I think we're at a critical juncture in technology due to factors that Marilyn talked about, tight budgets, high user expectations, consumerization of technology, different delivery mechanisms, et cetera. Our user community, I can't stand up there anymore and say we're standardizing on this platform because the smart people in the university know why. The technologies are flexible enough. You need to be adaptive to support them. I think we have to figure out how to operate differently. That's why I talk about solutions and service. I don't talk about ERP or web or cloud or whatever. Our goal is to provide solutions and service to the community to enable their teaching, their research, student learning, student outcomes, et cetera. I sat in a meeting with a whole 35 CIOs, not higher ed, and I kept hearing the same old mantras. Well, the users didn't follow testing procedures, and we didn't follow the project plan X, Y, and Z, and they don't know their requirements. And I just thought, that's crazy. If you're going to stand behind process and procedure going forward, they're going to find alternative ways to get technology delivered to them. So I think we have to have a different mindset, we as technologists, and realize the world's changing, and it's fast, and you need to be adaptive and solution-oriented, in my opinion, to provide value to your constituents.
I guess I want to add something that I think is really important, because being customer-focused, in my opinion, is not just doing what the customers want to do. It's providing them alternatives and advice about what is best when you have those alternatives mm-hmm. and advice. And I think that's our duty to do that. And I know that sometimes people feel like the clerks because of the way the customers act or treat them. Mm-hmm. But customers are really looking at clients, the folks that we work with, our business partners, are really looking for help, advice, alternatives. And it's our duty to provide them and to be at the table providing them when we work with them.
The difference between service and subservience,
mm-hmm. yes.
right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And if you have a chance at breaks or today to talk to these folks, their transformation stories are pretty phenomenal and kind of moving the Titanic, as you mentioned. And in fact, a couple years ago when we put our latest book together, we wanted to have three real-world case studies. And so we had, at that time, we had worked with over 3,000 IT organizations around the world, all industries. And so we had a pretty big pick in terms of people to choose from. One of the case studies that we selected was actually Mitch's and Bowden's transformation story. So if you don't want to grab the book, shoot me an email and I'll send you the case study. It's a great story, but grab these guys if you can. And what would you say? I mean, it's a three-year journey, right? I mean, to change a culture, to move the Titanic 180, to your question, it's at least 3 years of heavy lifting, wouldn't you say?
3 years to turn the Titanic and 2 years to change the CIO.
Is that after or before you
after
the Titanic?
I've done the three-year thing like four times with various businesses and stuff. And so at the end of 3 years, when they hired me, I told them I was going to stay 3 years and leave. I can fix all this. 3 years gone. And so at 3 years, they said to me, my staff, the president, the trustees, said it was time for me to grow up. And I needed to stay somewhere long enough to see what it was like to run one of these organizations rather than just build one. And I was resistant at first. I said, wait a minute, I'm resistant to change. There's something wrong here. I gotta drink my own Kool-Aid. So I did, and it was probably the best thing I've ever done.
Very good. Well, Christina's given me the thumbs up here at the clock. So if you can, I'm sorry we didn't get your question, but please come up after, and we'll get to that question for you. And the same with you if you have other questions. But thank you so much. Christine said that you were going to ask some phenomenal questions today. So thank you for that. It really made for a really great session. Would you help me in giving a hand to this great panel here? You guys are awesome. Thank you so much. Great job.